The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I guess it'll be played a lot. They've been putting out clips and dribs and drabs, but Joe Biden did an interview with Univision, a sit-down interview with Univision last week, on-camera interview that they delayed until... I guess this week, airing of it. And boy, I don't know why they thought this was a good idea. Well, I suppose it's because of his failing numbers of Hispanic American voters. But would you just listen to this clip in the ongoing crisis of the emperor with no clothes? Just listen and tell me if you hear anything odd here. Mr. Bill, can I get your ears on this too? Listen to your president talking to the reporter from Univision.
Did you spend a lot of time thinking about what your legacy would look like?
Well, I hope the legacy is that I kept my word, that I said that the reason I was running was to help change the life of ordinary people and reduce the prospect of war, and because of Vietnam. And when I ran, I said that...
I don't really need to go further, do I? Should I do it again? Did you catch it? Maybe you didn't. It went by kind of fast.
The life of ordinary people. It reduced the prospect of war. And because of Vietnam...
Does he think we're in war with Vietnam? Still? This is an incredible thing. 50 years after we left? 50 years after we left? He was in the Senate during Vietnam. This is what does happen with dementia, is you revert back to just the parts of your life that you think are still current and that you know. I mean, I've dealt with it in my own family, and I've seen it. The idea that... How is this not a national security crisis? The president of the United States thinks Mexico is involved when he's trying to prove his mental acuity after the Robert Hur report. He talks about Mexico as being involved in the Gaza-Israel fight war. And here, a week ago, he's talking about reducing the prospect of war because of Vietnam. How is this not a national security crisis? I really want no reporter ever again to say Donald Trump is going to be a dangerous president when it comes to allies and foes. He will start World War III or World War IV, depending if you thought we've already been through World War III, as some people think we have been. I really want people to ask themselves, what could be more of a national security threat than someone who has the power and the ability to send this nation to war and to direct the nature of that war when he thinks Mexico is in the Middle East and when he thinks Vietnam is the threat we have to worry about right now? I really want Thomas Friedman to answer that. I want Peter Baker at the New York Times to answer that. I want all of the reporters at the Washington Post, starting with Jennifer Rubin, to answer that. How is this not the most important national security threat we have, our own president, our own absent president? All right, let's go to Rick in Phoenix. Hello, Rick. How are you?
I'm doing well, Seth. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
I really appreciate the show that you've done so far, especially the information that you've shared with us on abortion.
Oh, thank you.
I have a request, and then I may have an answer to why the abortion stances are so intractable.
Okay.
But first, in regards to the request, I thank you very much for making President Reagan's statements and views and thoughts on abortion, sharing those, because they were powerful then, and I think they're very powerful now. And, you know, not too long back, you shared some writing that Jackson had written about abortion.
I'll do it again today if you want. I'll do it again if you want.
Yeah, before he...
before he ran for president, yeah.
The other way, yeah. And it was very powerful what he wrote. So, Seth, my request is this. You are a excellent writer, and I'd like to ask you to consider you or maybe some of your some of the writers in your group, or maybe all together, that you write a pro-life prayer that could be disseminated far and wide over the airways in this spiritual and cultural and political battle that is going on, that the Lord would grant the pro-life side victory, and that he would defeat the pro-death evil abortion, and that those who are on the side of death would, in the words of Scripture, that God will grant them repentance, leading them to a knowledge of the truth, and that they will come to their senses and escape from the trap of the devil who has taken them captive to do his will.
That's a beautiful request, and very kind of you to do it. Here's what I think I will do with it, but I want to follow up with you on this too. So don't leave me.
Okay.
I do a morning prayer with a friend on the phone every morning, and he is of a similar mindset as we are. I think what we would do is we rotate every other day. It's that person's responsibility to write the morning prayer, so he'll do one tomorrow. I did wine this morning, and then on and on. I think what I will do is I will ask if we can. I'll ask him if we can work on one together that fulfills your request. It might take a little while, not too long.
Well,
it might take a day or two, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I understand.
And then I will email it to you, and then I will have you review it, and then we'll go with it. How's that?
Okay. That would be great. And would you like me to email the request?
Yeah, sure.
If
you don't mind, it would be a good reminder. But I now want to pick a bone.
Okay.
Or a knit. What's the phrase? Do you pick a bone? I have a bone to pick with you. Yes.
There you go.
And it's not really with you.
I have many bones.
Well, it's not one of your bones, I don't think. But
it
is a bone to pick.
Okay.
And it's not going to be very kind to our side.
Yeah.
There have been, and I have been to, as I gather, you have probably been to any number of pro-life marches, rallies, watched them, and there's been a ton of prayer.
Yes.
Why the heck, the moment the thing we prayed for, did we become so unwound and unreasonable and not on the same page and ready to go with that which we had been praying for 50 years? I am just beside myself at the incompetence of the pro-life movement to get the pro-life movement itself on the same page. Back to something I think it was Jenna Ellis who wrote this morning. We are just finding out that when people said they were pro-life, it turned out they didn't mean what we thought they meant.
Yeah. Well, and Seth, I agree with you 100%. That is a very significant question. And boy, the only response I have to that is that the devil is in the details.
Maybe. I'm willing to grant that. I'm willing to grant that. You know, originally that phrase, believe it or not, was the angel is in the details. That was the origin of that phrase, believe it or not. And
Seth, I love you, brother. I always get an education when I talk to you. But I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I'm going to take a break and come back to you because I have to. But I have to tell you a little bit. I'm willing to be called out and wrong on this. But I have to tell you, the pro-life community right now is feeling a lot, not all of it, parts of it. Are feeling a lot to me like churches and synagogues during COVID. They're afraid of something more than what they should be afraid of. They're answering to the wrong authority here. We'll be right back. Why am I the only one in this entire office that thinks that Cher has a good voice and likes her music? You guys are all wrong. I'll be the majority of one here. Right makes might, not the other way around. Rick, thanks for waiting.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, Seth.
You bet. Anyway, I was saying, sure, the prayer. Also, disappointed that those who have prayed for so long just kind of fell apart once they got what they prayed for.
Yeah. You know, Seth, during the break, I was thinking about that. It's kind of ominous that the saying used to be the angel.
Yeah, the angel or God is in the details. That was
the devil.
We now say it's the devil, as if that's what we expect
kinda,
more of. Right.
Yeah, that's kind of ominous.
Yeah,
Anyway, moving on to you. I think you asked the question or talked some about why. The situation surrounding the abortion debate is so intractable, and
right.
People just refuse. So I think there are three things that are involved: money, power, and ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just flesh that out real quickly, and then I'd like to get your I want to get your thoughts and input on that about that. The part of it is related to the fact that you have talked about considerably, that over the past, 25 years or something, that more people have left the church, left religion, than, you know, all the stuff. Well,
then all of the Billy Graham crusades and the first and second Great Awakenings combined.
Yeah. And that's scary. And I think that has had a tremendous impact on this.
Yes.
Now, when I say money, have you heard anybody or has anybody talked about how much money Planned Parenthood and the other organizations are pouring into Arizona?
That's a lot.
In this battle?
I know. It's in the tens of millions of dollars.
It's a ton of money.
Yeah.
A ton of money.
I know.
And so they have a tremendously vested interest in keeping this thing going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing, power. Politicians, you know, a lot of them, power is the most important thing. And this is an issue where they are able to coerce and manipulate and lie and increase their power and get more power over more bureaucracies, mm-hmm. more this and more that, mm-hmm. and more the other. Mm-hmm. And the third thing I suggest is ignorance. Several years ago, there was a movie, a true story about a woman who was considerably up in Planned Parenthood. She had worked for them for many, many years.
I think I know it. Yeah, I didn't see it, but I remember
it. Did you see
that? No, but I remember hearing about it or reading about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
It was gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
And it told why she left Planned Parenthood and why she made the change. What it was is that somehow or the other, the circumstances came around that she had to be present for an abortion, and she watched a suction abortion on a sonogram, and they showed it in the movie. Oh, man.
I know.
It's so gut-wrenching.
I know.
And I think people just don't stop to think about what we're talking about.
Well, that's one of the complaints I have. Every politician says this is a complicated matter. It actually isn't.
Yeah.
It actually isn't. Let's say it. Let's talk about it. Let's explain it for what it is, and then you tell me your position. It should not be a complicated matter. Jesse Jackson put it well. It is a living human being because it is growing, and anything growing is living. It's that simple. Now, based on that simple notion and fact, where are you? I am sick and tired of hearing politicians say this is complicated. It's not. Not at the wholesale level. The retail level, perhaps, but not at the wholesale understanding of what it is we are talking about, which is why it is surrounded by euphemism by the side that you're declaiming against. A baby is not a baby. An unborn child is not an unborn child. They are fetuses. And that was a Jesse Jackson point, too. They weren't human beings. They weren't black human beings. They weren't African human beings. They were slaves and N-words. You dehumanize them through the use of psycholinguistics so that you can do anything you want to that entity that you have now euphemized.
Yeah.
So that's an issue. I think the PowerPoint, the third prong, you said, what was it, money, power, and I...
Power and ignorance.
Okay, so I think the power thing is the one I'm most focused on right now because it seems to be a cowering over the loss of political power. And I remember asking Hadley Arkus once, so professor at Amherst who's written a lot on this issue. I remember asking Hadley, did I draw? We lost him. It's okay. I'll make the point. It's okay. I said, what do you say to those people? Because he's a proud Republican and conservative and had been active and wrote a lot of legislation, by the way, testified on a lot of legislation. I said, what do you say to people that say the Republican Party really ought to get out of this talking about abortion business because it's costing us elections? And he said, fine, let's just spend all our time talking about things that don't mean very much. Is that what the lesson is here? Is that what the lesson is? Bill, what is line two? Is line two a new caller or Bill? Line two's a new caller. We'll go to him in just a moment. Okay. But you take the point. We can talk about things that don't matter very much and constrain the issues we are supposed to care about and abandon the entire purpose of the Republican Party, which was founded on a moral basis. It was founded in 1856 on a moral basis after reciting, go and read the platform, the Declaration of Independence and reincorporating it into the party platform. Laws of nature, nature's God, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life. Our country starts with life. Our country starts with life. The Republican Party in the 1856 first platform then went on to say it was opposed to the twin relics of barbarism. That's the language from the platform. Twin relics of barbarism. Guess what? They weren't about tariffs and they weren't about taxes. They weren't about infrastructure. They were about slavery and polygamy. Those were the two twin relics of barbarism that our party was founded to oppose. So if you want to just have a party that talks about taxes and tariffs, go right ahead. I'll vote for it because I'm with you on that. But if you want to have a party that's true to its soul and to this country's soul and to the souls of others and does deal with important things and does think that the important matter, that's the party I really want to support. Are we live, Mr. Bill? Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. How did it not play a song? We live by music. He who is not struck by the mystic chords of music is subjecting himself to all forms of stratagem, William Shakespeare said. So you're subjecting yourself to stratagem, Mr. Bill, just so you know. Yeah, I bet you can. Josh is in Gilbert. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Seth, thank you for taking the call.
Of course.
And My apologies to Bill. I probably thought it was David, so maybe I said thank you, David.
Oh, that's okay. David is infirmed. David is unwell today.
Oh, okay.
Nothing,
right.
Nothing well, serious. He's still sending me sardonic and recalcitrant texts.
Oh, funny. I was just going to, just quick change of subject, and I'll be real fast here. I was reading something, I think in Jerusalem Post or Times of Israel about just, you know, what's going on over there. And somebody made a comment on one of the articles, and I thought it was kind of an eye-opener, just something I never really thought of, and I don't really think anyone really talks about it here, is the gentleman just made a comment that he thought one of the fundamental flaws that Israel made, or really the fundamental flaw Israel made when the October 7th kind of war started, I guess, is that Israel decided to take on the responsibility in what is in essence their enemy's civilian population. And how that's never happened, basically, in the history of warfare before. And I thought, wow, that's kind of true. Like, why does Israel feel the need to take care of a population that voted for the people who caused, you know, the attack? So I guess it's more of a rhetorical question, but I thought I'd just kind of get your thoughts, because I don't know why Israel seems to feel the need to take care of the civilians of Gaza. And I even saw the other day that this whole Rafah offensive that they're looking to do, Israel's even trying to set up like 10, you know, encampments outside of Rafah to like move the civilians into. Now, of course, I'm not saying I'm for civilian deaths, of course, but it does kind of boggle the mind that you're fighting an enemy in which I guess these people voted for. So just really odd.
It boggles the mind to think that Israel is condemned for decimating a civilian population and engaging in genocide when they are doing the very things you are speaking of, including, by the way, having operated in an Israeli hospital with Jewish doctors on a brain tumor of Yahya Sinwar, who is the leader of Hamas today. That is what Israel does. And it is being blamed for genocide and the abuse of a civilian population. These dunderheads in our political community and these youth who have no idea what war is or the history of any war or what the ratios in war happen to be quite typically in civilian to non-civilian combatant deaths are speaking from levels of ignorance they can't even understand when you try and explain it to them because of such invincible ignorance that they have been saddled with. But you're absolutely right. There was something called a blockade during World War II of Germany. Winston Churchill did not think it was his business to deliver food to the areas he was bombing.
Exactly, yeah. That's what the gentleman kind of made, you know, points to. So,
but Israel does. But Israel does and gets blamed for it. So, you know, this is the operation that we live under. This is the world that we live with. All we can do is explain. You know, it's a really sad thing. I saw an interview that Jamie Raskin was giving. He's a liberal congressman from Maryland. At the 92nd Y, and he was asked a question about whether all the protesting on the streets has had an effect on the foreign policy towards Israel, and he said, absolutely it has, and that's why we encourage it. I hope people understand what that means. I hope people understand what that means. It means our foreign policy, or any policy, is being changed by the least wise among us on the streets, 17 and 18-year-olds who can't tell you what river and what sea they want Israel to be removed from. It's a scary admission. It's quite a scary admission. Thanks for it, Josh. 602-508-0960. 602-5080-960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. It was brought up earlier by, I think it was Rick. I've read parts of it. I've never read it in full. Now is the time to do it. Jesse Jackson, 1977. The question of life is the question of the 20th century. Race and poverty are dimensions of the life question, but discussions about abortion have brought the issue into focus in a much sharper way. How will we respect and understand the nature of life itself as the overriding moral issue, not of the black race, but of the human race? The question of abortion confronts me in several different ways. First, although I do not profess to be a biologist, I have studied biology and know something about life from the point of view of the natural sciences. Second, I am a minister of the gospel and therefore feel that abortion has a religious and moral dimension that I must consider. Third, I was born out of wedlock and against the advice that my mother received from her doctor, and therefore abortion is a personal issue for me. From my perspective, human life is the highest good, the summum bonum. Human life itself is the highest human good, and God is the supreme good because he is the giver of life. That is my philosophy. Everything I do proceeds from that religious and philosophical premise. Life is the highest good, and therefore you fight for life, using means consistent with that end. Life is the highest human good, not on its own naturalistic merits, but because life is supernatural, a gift from God. Therefore, life is the highest human good because life is sacred. Biologically speaking, thousands of male sperms are put into female reproductive tracts during intercourse, but only once in a while do the egg and sperm bring about fertilization. Some call that connection accidental. I choose to call it providential. It takes three to make a baby, a man, a woman, and the Holy Spirit. I believe in family planning. I do not believe that families ought to have children, as some people did where I was growing up, by the dozens. I believe in methods of contraception, prophylactics, and others. I believe in education. We ought to teach it in the home. I think that if people are properly educated, they will appreciate the act and know its ultimate function, purpose, and significance. In the abortion debate, one of the crucial questions is, when does life begin? Anything growing is living. Therefore, human life begins when the sperm and egg join and drop into the fallopian tube and the pulsation of life takes place. From that point, life may be described differently, but the essence is the same. Egg, embryo, fetus, baby, child, teenager, adult. The name has changed, but the game remains the same. Human beings cannot give or create life by themselves. It is really a gift. Therefore, one does not have the right to take away that which he does not have the ability to give. Some argue, suppose someone does not want to have the baby. They say the very fact that that person doesn't want to have the baby means the psychological damage to the child is reason enough to abort the baby. I disagree. The solution to that problem is not to kill the innocent baby, but to deal with the values and the attitude towards life, that which has allowed someone not to want a baby. Deal with that attitude that would allow someone to take away that which, again, that person could not give. Some argue that the man does not have the baby and will not be responsible for the baby after it is born, therefore it is all right to kill it. Again, the logic is off. The premise is that the man is irresponsible. If that is the problem, then deal with making him responsible. Deal with what you are dealing with, not with the weak, innocent, and unprotected. The essence of Jesus' message dealt with this very problem, the problem of the inner attitude and motive of a person. If in your heart was his central message. The actual abortion is merely the logical conclusion of a prior attitude that one has toward life itself. Deal with the cause, not merely the effect. Some of the most dangerous arguments stem from popular judgments about life's ultimate meaning, but the logical conclusion of their position is never pursued. Some people may unconsciously operate their lives as if pleasure is life's highest good and pain and suffering greatest enemy. That position, if followed to its logical conclusion, means that that which prohibits pleasure should be done away with by whatever means are necessary. By the same rationale, whatever means are necessary should be used to prevent suffering and pain. My position is not to negate pleasure nor elevate suffering, but merely to argue against their being elevated to an ultimate, them being elevated to an ultimate end of life itself. Because if they are so elevated, anything, including murder and genocide, can be carried out in those names. Often people who analyze and operate in the public sphere are especially prone to argue in these ways. Sociologists argue for population control on the basis of a shortage of housing and food. I would raise two issues. One, it is strange that they choose to start talking about population control at the same time that black people and people of color around the world are demanding their rightful place as human citizens and their rightful share of material wealth. Two, people of color are for the most part powerless with regard to decisions made about population control And given the history of people of color in the modern world, we have no reason to assume that whites are going to look out for their best interests anymore. Politicians argue for abortion largely because they do not want to spend the necessary money to feed, clothe, and educate. Here, arguments for inconvenience and economic savings take precedence over arguments for human value and human life. I read recently where a politician from New York was justifying abortion because they had prevented 10,000 welfare babies from being born. In my mind, serious moral questions arise when politicians are willing to pay welfare mothers to have an abortion, but will not pay for a hot school lunch program to the already born children of these same mothers. I think the economic objections are not valid because we are confronted with a whole new economic problem. The basic and historic problem has been the inability to feed everyone in the world, even if the will were there to do so. Psychiatrists, social workers, doctors often argue for abortion on the basis that there may be emotional or mental scariness. But who of us is complete? If incompleteness were the criteria for taking life, we would all be dead. If you can justify abortion on the basis of emotional incompleteness, then your logic could also lead you to killing other forms of incompleteness: the blind, the crippled, the elderly. There are those who argue that the right to privacy is of a higher order than the right to life. I believe that life is not private, but rather it is public and universal. If one accepts the position that life is private and therefore you have the right to do with it as you please, one must also accept the conclusion of that logic. That was the premise of slavery. You could not protest the existence or treatment of slaves on the plantation because that was private and therefore outside of your right to be concerned. Another area that concerns me greatly, namely because I know how it has been used with regard to race, is the psycholinguistics involved. If something can be dehumanized through the rhetoric and used to describe it, then the major battle has won. That is why the Constitution was able to refer to us as something other than human beings. It was part of the dehumanizing process. The first step was to distort the image of us as human beings in order to justify that which they wanted to do and not even feel like they had done anything wrong. Those advocates of taking life prior to birth do not call it killing or murder, they call it abortion, and they never talk about a baby because that would imply something human. Rather, they talk about aborting a fetus. Fetus sounds less than human, and therefore it can be justified. In conclusion, even if one does take life by aborting a baby, as a minister of Jesus Christ, I must also inform or remind that there is a doctrine of forgiveness. The God I serve is a forgiving God. Everyone can come to the mercy and seat. But, and this may be the essence of my argument, suppose one is so hard-hearted and so indifferent to life until he assumes that there is nothing for which to be forgiven, what happens to the mind of a person and the moral fabric of a nation that accepts the aborting of the life of a baby without a pang of conscience? It is that question itself, which will let us know whether we will have a hell or not right here on earth. Jesse Jackson, 1977. Portions of this show are brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then R-E-F-Y.com, or give them a call at 888-YRefi24. What they offer is a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio that actually helps people and where you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. There are absolutely no fees with YRefi. There is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. And, of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises. Again, investyrefi.com or 888-YRefi24. Let's go to Rochelle in Phoenix. Hi, Rochelle.
Hi, Seth. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a story about a college class I took. Now, I was working out at Luke Air Force Base. So I was going to college out there also. And so most of my classes were obviously men, lots of men in my class. I had to take an elective, and I took an elective called Ethical Issues in Medicine Biology. Really interesting class, talked a lot about different topics. And then we came to abortion. So the teacher took a poll, how many you know, how many of us were against abortion, and very few raised our hand. We probably had 30 people in the class. And then we watched the silent scream. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Not only have I was just emailing someone about it, Bernard Nathanson's movie, yeah.
Okay, so we watched it. By the time it was done, I was not the only one crying,
mm-hmm.
and some of the men were.
Mm-hmm.
So then the teacher took another poll, and it completely changed.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of the people in the class were now against abortion. I almost think that should be a requirement.
Well, I hope I wish it were that easy. Rochelle, I'm so with you on wanting that to be the case. My worry about documentaries like that, and I'm running out of time. Feel free to call back tomorrow on a longer segment because I have a guest coming up. But my concern is I was emailing. I remember when that movie came out, 83, 84, everyone in the pro-life community said, game over. And it was hardly over. My view about documentaries is they don't have lasting effects. I've seen it again and again and again and again. Education, Waiting for Superman. I can go down the list. All the Dinesh D'Souza document. Could it change a room? Yes. I would like to know 3 years after the viewing of it how many people still held the views of their changed mind. Anyway, Rochelle, let's talk more about it. And I love you for bringing that up. Please do access it and watch it. It is worth it. I'll be right back.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.